Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I am your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
And today, we're going to do some hobby talk. A topic in which I actually told you what it is beforehand. I do that now.
We're lobbying for hobbying.
For the audience's sake, I don't tell you what the lore episodes are, mostly just because sometimes I like to get your just genuine surprise about it. But this one, because now especially I want to bring in that good, have that gunpla. I mean, honestly, just in general,
what hobby my finesse, talk, my skills.
Yeah, well, not or I don't know, knowledge, things you've done,
yeah,
things you know about. Bring it in here.
Bring it on in. The door's open.
So you don't have to just kind of think all of a sudden in that moment, how does something I say relate to you? You can bring something up yourself, stuff like that. So today we're talking specifically with hobbying, kind of hobby upgrades. Like, what are the things, like, all right, you know, because we did like our starter episodes. This is kind of a sequel, you know. What, after you have all those first things that we kind of talked about and maybe we alluded to, maybe now, like, what are those things that we alluded to upgrading so that you could get to in the future? What are they now? Or, like, what can you reach for now? And this would be both Warhammer and somewhat. And we kind of mentioned a couple of them with your station in the Gundam episode. But could be used for gunplay as well. Honestly, most of what we'll talk about today, I think honestly can very much be, is and can be used in gunplay for multiple ways and reasons. One of which might actually surprise you. No, that's not just a clickbait statement. I actually think I might surprise you with one.
Are you saying I won't believe what happens next?
You know what? You won't believe what happens.
That's a tall order.
Probably 5/6 of the way through this episode.
Whoa. We're getting fractional. Now it's serious.
I'm trying to think of something. I just tried to think of a fraction that was near the end, but not as big as a quarter, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So
let's do it. I'm excited. Yeah.
So let's start off. I kind of made a small list of some things here. Obviously, you know, you might have some of the same. I kind of semi-categorize them. So this is my, like, must-have upgrades. Like, no matter what, you got to take this as, like, your next step. And the first one is the better snipers. I think for both Gundam and Warhammer, it's equal. Better nippers make better models.
Yeah, this is always a pertinent question of, like, when is the right time to upgrade? When do I need to make the upgrade? And why do I need to make the upgrade?
Yeah, and I mean, I think the when for any time that you're ready to make an upgrade is obviously just, like, when you feel like, the moment you feel like the tool you have is no longer giving you the satisfactory results. So, like, in the case of a nipper, right? You are constant, the ones you started with, whatever they are, right? They're constantly leaving you with, you know, either weird marks, like or you're not cutting the plastic all the way through of the nub. So you have these, like, little dangly bits hanging every time.
Yes,
and you always
you're
constantly having to cut and mark with your X-Acto knife to clean up edges, you know? That's, like, when you start noticing that and it starts bugging you, that's the time.
Yeah, because what's going to happen with that is if you're not getting clean cuts like you need and it's, like, noticeable, a lot of times the reason for that is because obviously, like, the blade itself can get dulled. Over time, you can actually, like, I've got, like, my old pair that I used for years I'm looking at right now, and you can literally see where there's, like, ridges in the blade from where it's been worn down so much. And if you can't you know, get those clean cuts, then you're just going to spend more time in like the sanding process of like trying to weather down the remaining nubs and smooth everything over. So that's just more extra work you have to do because you couldn't get that really good cut the first time around.
Yeah. And I feel like with what I remember you telling me about high grade kits in Gundam or in Gunpla, that like, I think getting the better nippers early can benefit you because sometimes with Warhammer, you can kind of cover some things with a decent enough paint job. You don't really get that.
Just toss a whole pot of paint on it and you'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah, you know. You can't see the weird extra divot from the bad nip mark or from like the weird cut line you made on the model when you just pour a giant vat of paint on it. But no, I mean like especially just again if the paint job is maybe done well enough, or honestly you could turn like if you dug too deep, say, you know, like you could turn that into a battle scar, you know, but like if you don't paint a Gunpla and you just use the colored plastic, then it's just there. Everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got multiple high grades that are kind of around my apartment here. There's a couple I've got sitting right on my bookshelf. There's a nice Crossbones Gundam I got over there. And if you look at it, it's not, I haven't painted it at all yet. I haven't done any painting or panel lining. And you can absolutely see there's a couple spots in the legs where it's like the pressure from cutting off the piece from the runners themselves. And so you've got that kind of like white like abrasion on the side that's just like really visible because it hasn't actually been sanded down properly.
I mean, and so when it comes to, you know, grabbing the better nipper, I mean, we talked about in the Gundam episode, I mean, there is the God's Hand and like the one that everybody loves, but there are alternatives. And I mean, the number one thing that you mentioned and I've always heard and known is obviously pick something that's sharp, but also like is, you know, labeled as a good material. So like maybe, you know, is like a steel or something that isn't like, you know, aluminum is probably fine, but that will wear because it's softer. And then something with some type of like decent spring back mechanism. A good example is like the Citadel one you get in like the paint kit, like the paint starter set.
Mm-hmm.
That just uses like two little like angled metal pieces to just like kind of give a little bit of resistance. It doesn't really do any, like it's really non-existent. Sure. And having that spring back can be very good for helping you gauge a lot of the way you cut through it, especially because the worst thing that you can run into with a pair of non-sharp ones is the amount you have to really squeeze and dig into the plastic to get it off the sprue. We don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad. and you had, and now, but you had kind of a hands alternative that you brought up in the Gundam episode. And we can kind of talk about it again.
I had a couple of them there. Yep.
Do you have, I mean, say, do you still just have the cheaper model of that?
I am still using, I had brought up in that episode, the Ruatul 1, mm-hmm. model 1. It's a 4.7 inch. And I'm still using those. They've been working great so far. Really nice, really clean cuts. They're single edged, which is what you're going to see on a lot of these side cutters that people tend to recommend. Because again, you're not getting that like pinch factor that you get if both of the edges are sharp. Instead, it's kind of giving it a place for the plastic to rest, and then you can just kind of cut through it a little easier. It's a little bit cleaner as a result. But I've been running those over this past month or so, and they're still working real good for me.
Yeah, and I mean, if you got like one that came in one of those, like, you know, modeler basic, like if your starting point was like you got one of those basic tool, like toolkits for what, you know, just like hobby toolkits. Sometimes some of those nippers will have like, it's like a piece of metal where like in, you know, they connect to each side, in the middle they like spiral at each other. So it creates the spring by squeezing it and the metal like being pushed, the circle growing, and then that force brings them out. Those are fine. Obviously, in that scenario, I would look at the blade. Like, is the blade giving you that kind of ability to get in and around portions? Like, because, man, sometimes these freaking things are in such weird angles.
That's the big thing. So it's the combination of, because a lot of those, like the ones I've shown you, the one I'm holding in my hand. So it's like, you know, these really basic side cutters. They've got that spring you were talking about, where it's essentially just like a three rung spring attached to a metal point on each side. What'll usually happen with those cheaper cutters is you'll have that in combination with a blade that is sharp on both sides instead of just being like a single sharp blade. And so you're not getting a ton of pressure from the spring. You're not getting a lot of resistance from that. And then you've got those double blades, and that's where a lot of that pinching problem is going to come in. That's why it's like nice to have, the more focused spring on the side, or sort of in between, I guess I should say, that you see on like the Rua tool and the God Hand and all that, because you're getting a lot more tension off of that than you are off of this, like, larger spring that just kind of sits on top of the cutters themselves.
Yeah, and one, not only that, but then a lot of these hobby tools you'll see where the spring is, or the, not the spring, the cutter is angled, and that angle can be super helpful for getting these like weird angle, like parts of the sprue that just don't, you know, maybe like you have to like try to like finagle your hands in such a way to like try to get this clean cut without like leaving extra bits of the sprue left behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of the more basic cutters, they also have larger blades in general. Mm-hmm. So it's nice being able to get something that has, that it's either like at an angle like that where it can reach, you know, more peculiar spaces, or even if the blades themselves, like the blades don't need to be super big.
No, a lot of sprues are pretty small.
For the intention of what you're trying to cut on the sprues and on the runners, the actual point that you're trying to cut, the plastic isn't usually that big. You don't need huge blades. It's better to have a smaller blade that you can kind of rotate around to be able to get into those spots.
Yeah, the biggest I've ever seen has been on some of the like knight and tank models. But like even then, it's still not that big. And they're on such like flat panels that inherently it's easy to cut. I mean, it's those ones, if they're like they're so like flatly placed when they're that big, that like honestly at that point literally anything would work. So it's just more about like obviously when you need it for the what are on average smaller parts. Otherwise, next up, one of the ones, because I was actually make the note with the nippers actually quick, was, you know, one of the things that also is helpful is that when the blades are also like that bit smaller, right? You don't get like, this is the reason we don't get like electrical wire cutters, you know, like really big.
And that's something, because I think it's very easy to, like when you're starting out, to think like, oh, I can just like grab a wire cutter from a toolbox and that's like good enough. The first thing that you're going to run into with that is how, if you've worked with wire cutters, like how big they are. Obviously they're meant for a very different purpose, and they're not very good at like if you genuinely try to use them, they're not good at getting into those runners or those sprues at all.
No.
And the blade is very different as well. Like what's most likely going to happen is that you're just going to kind of end up wearing out your wire cutters faster, which you probably need those for more important things like doing electrical wiring.
Like wires.
Yeah. Ideally, you don't want to do that.
No. But something that is not always better when you get really small ones is that where your mind might go when you think of a brush upgrade. And really to me, the way to go is the natural hair brushes or sable hair brushes. You know, there are a lot of different ones. I know it's one of those things where like you might see some people's Kalinske sable or various, you know, like different sets out there and be like, that's a lot of money, you know, and there are ones that are out there that are really expensive. I mean, for example, like the Artist Opus brushes, I need to remind myself how much, like those are around, like those are over $100 for a set. But there are obviously different realms. So like if you want really like a good set with a lot of brushes, Chronicle RPG, there it goes. They sell a Sable Kalinske collection that's like $65, depending on where you can get it. If you go to some discount sites, you can get it for $52. That's, you know, six real hair brushes. And that's not bad in that comparison. Or you can even go a step lower. There is a three brush set from Vallejo, which I own, that costs $20. So there's a lot, and this is three brushes, and honestly, they're the three brushes that you would ever need, a size 0, 1, and 2. For model painting, quite honestly, you don't need any bigger than a 2 on the regular, other than a dry brush, which I did also buy. I did get their dry brushes. I wanted nice dry brushes. Honestly, a good pair of dry brushes goes such a long way, especially if you love to slap chop like I do. It's very nice. It's very nice. And then dry brushing, even in general, is a good skill to build just because it's a great way to get highlights onto a model if you're not great at highlights. Looking at me. And these brushes have been actually very nice. I really like them. The thing I do recommend that you should get sooner than later, though, with the natural hair brushes is brush butter or cleaner. It comes in like a tub. Different companies call it different things. But it is such a nice city to have, especially depending on the paints you use. Because the important thing is here, I used to like live in this world of like, oh, in order to get into the eye holes of my models or to like get paint or like to get washes into crevices, I'm going to get really tiny brushes. So I have like one of the tiniest like synthetic brush heads ever. Like, you know, that you can put on a brush to still at least say that there is hair on the brush. And that thing splays like hell. That thing splays like crazy because it's synthetic. It's just what synthetic brushes often tend to do. They splay very. Can you use brush cleaner and butter to help fix them too? Sure. But natural hair is way more likely to get back to a point with just water. And like not have these weird splays at the end of them or this rogue hair that's bent over. It's always more likely going to end up kind of just springing back into shape with significantly less like not wear and tear, but like TLC to get it back to new condition, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in the world of gunplay, the place that really comes in handy is people who use oil paints for that panel lining. You've seen the videos. We've all seen the oil paint where they just dip the brush in and it just like spreads over into all the crevice. You know, we've all seen it.
Yep. They're very good at making it look very easy.
Yes, but the thing that will help you get that going better is having a brush that can refine its tip, that can maintain its tip. Because if you got a very like flat or splayed brush, it will go everywhere. You're going to have a gigantic like splotch mark for where you dipped your brush into that crease, you know? So there's a lot of price points to get into natural brush hairs. Obviously, you can go as expensive or as cheap as you want. And honestly, there is a realm of like price to performance in some respect. But I think there's a point maybe where it does also become, you know, there's like many things, there's a realm of diminishing returns. Like, for example, I don't know that necessarily spending the $100 versus the $60 for the Artist Opus kit versus the Chronicle RPG kit is going to be better or worse, you know?
Is it appropriate to say that regardless of the brush hair that you go with, like whichever price range you kind of dip into, even if you're going for the most expensive brush, you still want to stick to the rule of like less paint is more?
Yeah.
Like choosing to go for the more expensive option doesn't mean that you can now use more paint per stroke. Like you should still be erring on the side of like use a little bit at a time, use less to kind of keep yourself from getting those really ugly splotches going, so that you can just kind of fine tune as you go.
Correct. There, like, this is why, I mean, this is why anybody will always tell you, like, and why we mention, like, just go and get cheap brushes and learn to paint correctly.
Learn the technique. Because, yes, absolutely.
Because that is always going to be the number one thing that carries you through. If you suddenly drop everything you ever learned just because you're like, oh, I've got a Kolinsky Sable brush, you know, like, for whatever, like, you've learned nothing, you know, like, and it's going to end up looking splotchy and messy. And that's just, there's no changing, you can't fix, I mean, like many things in this world, you can't fix technique with buying the more expensive thing, you know? That's why like a really good videographer can make an amazing, you know, amazing video or movie on a really crappy camera.
On a Game Boy camera, yeah.
Yeah, and whereas, like, you give somebody who has no idea how to shoot video, you know, an Arri, and they're going to, and it's going to look like a home movie still, because they don't know composition, they don't know zoom, they don't know technique, they don't know aperture, you know, even just the lighting triangle as a whole, you know, it's going to be still fairly subpar. But the cleaner is important to you. But I think it's, and honestly, that you could almost take as its own thing, even if you don't want to get the natural brush yet. Getting your cleaner might also even just help keep your synthetic brushes in a bit more of a line. It won't do, say, like as much work, you know, like it's not going to have as much benefit as it would with the natural, because obviously natural hairs just, they actually will like intake the moisture, whereas synthetic doesn't really care. It's plastic. But they don't hurt either. But another good one is if you haven't started it already, getting very fine tipped tweezers.
Yes.
Is very
tweezers
handy.
Are a great tool to have.
And it's almost, the tweezers is almost kind of in conjunction. Why I bring it up is maybe in conjunction with a couple other things, but like, there's a lot of times where, like, you know, when you just put models together, a lot of times there's almost very few models on this planet, I think, that are made especially between Warhammer and Gunpla, that you couldn't just put together with some plastic glue, you know, some good old Tamiya and your hands, you know, and just squeezing them together. But obviously in the case of like extra bits, sometimes basing, or hard to reach places, they come in handy. I mean, like, a good experiment for this is if your family in like a medical cabinet or something, right? They have like the tiny tweezers that maybe you would use for like splinters or a tick, you know? Grab it and use just the fine point. Try to grab a model by just that like fine point of that type of tweezer. and then like attach it to a like a hard to reach spot in a model, right? Like grab a random head and just like kind of put it into hard to reach crevices of a random model you have, right? Or, and I'm saying head from like a Warhammer scale size, whatever right. small bit from a Gunpla you could do too, right? But find something small, try to grab it and put it into a tight spot. So I think tweezers are super, super handy, especially once you start using super glue. If you ever need to use super glue for like resin parts or whatever, you need tweezers. And at that point, definitely don't use your family's medical cabinet tweezers. Have your own that you can mess up and get super glue all over it. I don't know if there are many times though in Gunpla that you need super glue.
Not a ton of cases, no. Sometimes with like certain accessories. Getting them to stay in place, but otherwise they're pretty good about having things just like click in.
There is something, especially Warhammer though, that you might need that super glue floor. That's magnets, like new little neodymium silver dime magnets, or obviously even much smaller than a dime. The ones I just bought for use in a number of models. Like, they look like they're the size of a crumb, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know their actual size. They come in super handy, especially any time that you are in a scenario or whatever, or an environment where WYSIWYG is important. Like, you know, when I did in Kill Team, especially, it's really easy to try to want to do this because Kill Team, unlike full-size 40K, is a little bit easier to maybe like be like, yeah, you know what? I can magnetize that one model so that then I can do WYSIWYG and I can change the weapon when I want to, right? That's a little bit easier to ask than like an entire regiment. But magnets are super handy for that. And various models obviously all can be more conducive for magnets, but you know, you're going to need the tweezer stuff and whatnot. Like, you're going to need that. And that's why, actually, also, if you can look into tweezers that are non-ferrous or have non-ferrous tips, so, like, not magnetic, then that is, like, the superb tweezer you found. But, like, magnets in general, though, with or without the magnetic tweezer, They come in super handy and they really can help you maybe like not have to make every single decision, you know, on a model, right? You can kind of play with maybe what you want to do. The other thing I've seen people do is use magnets on like, say, like large Tau mech units or knights, is do it so that they can reposition the model. Like, so if they want it to like be able to turn and face a certain way or, you know, whatever, you can kind of like pivot its torso, pivot its head, pivot its arms. You can do that with magnets because then obviously you're not hard gluing down the model. Because luckily with like something like Gundam, they build them so that they can be poseable. And obviously that's not the case in 40K. Or
yes, just Warhammer poseability in general. Is like a huge, huge priority with Gunpla versus most of your Warhammer models.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a difference, obviously, in the sense of what they're used for. One's used for a specific 100%. Game. For example, when the Gunpla like skirmish game comes out, I forgot its name already, but that those models likely won't be as poseable. They're also not mm-hmm. necessarily the size either as a full, you know, as a full-size Gunpla, but like these are the purposes that they have. But some people like those larger 40K models to have some poseability, and magnets allow for that. Otherwise, next, my other one was to bring up the hand drill, whether this be manual or electric. Especially if you're going to magnetize, you need a hand drill. Otherwise, how are you going to get the magnets to... You want the magnets to like sit flush in the model, and that's just not always an option. Mm-hmm. So you're going to need the hand drill if you're going to magnetize. But in general, a lot of people also will use a hand drill to drill out like gun barrels because they'll come with just like a flat front. And then the other one that's just kind of important is a lot of people will drill small holes in the feet because obviously those will get covered by the base later. But they'll do it so then they can set like they can have it like put on like a like a little stick, like a painting stick or something, so that they can paint and move around the model without having it to be on the base already. Especially when like they're planning like a really fancy base type, then that's a good way to paint, is by doing it that way. Again, this is probably one that doesn't really have as much play in Gunpla, but maybe there's some people that experiment with it, you know, create bullet holes. I don't know. Now, this one is for both of us, and this is of utmost importance, and that is a soft nail file or sand sticks. And I specify in saying a soft file. You'll see metal files a lot of places, but those are only good if you're trying to dig into the model. You're trying to shape it, like completely shape it into a new thing, right? Or like, for example, you have a bad pair of nippers and you have a weird like ridge at the bottom of the foot, say on a model. Well, then you can use a metal one and just shave that flat, right? Because you need it to be flat. If you try doing that though, say in an arm or a panel that needs to be, you know, that's already fine, you're just trying to get it into a good spot, you might shave it down way too much with a metal one. A soft file will not only give you the benefit of not digging too deep and giving you like a good place to go, you know, file it down, check, file it down, check, file it down, check. But also if it's round, if what you're filing is round, if it's a soft, especially foam file, especially with sand sticks, where a lot of those are like foam, you'll see them in the nail industry quite commonly, it will like press around so it won't immediately dig down and square off, say like a leg for a Warhammer model, right? Where like you want that leg to maintain its roundness so it won't shave it down. You can get it so that nub goes away and it's clean, but it still is a round leg. And then obviously with Gunpla, this is important because you're looking with a lot of flat panels that need to stay flat. I know some people use the sand sticks with like really light Dremels and stuff. I don't think that's as necessary. You can kind of look into it, but like I wouldn't go any more powerful than like the nail Dremels, you know, like not like the real tool Dremel.
Yeah.
No, you'll rip the shit out of your model.
Yep. You have to remember that you got to, there's like a threshold where you have to remember it's like the thing that you're handling, it is a plastic model. You kind of got to find that sweet spot of being able to sand it down, but also not just like straight up digging into it and causing more damage than what it would have been to begin with.
Otherwise, that's it kind of for my must have upgrades. Did you have anything that you think of as kind of that I didn't say that's kind of just like a must have upgrade for like Gunpla?
Something that we don't think about too often, because a lot of this talk has been about the actual tools themselves. I brought this up in the Gundam episode briefly too, but like, if you are working with runners or sprues of any kind, having something to catch the remnant bits and the things that you cut off as you go, or even to be able to just like place your pieces into as you're working. If you're working on something that has like multiple pieces that are very small and you want to be able to like kind of organize them or keep an eye on them, you know, using the like really basic like painter's cups that you can get at like Michael's and Hobby Lobby and stuff like that, just to have something to like drop your pieces into, but also to like place smaller pieces so that you have them somewhere if you need to work on something else in the meantime and then be able to come back to them is really important. Just having a little space where you can be able to drop, you know, remnants and little cutoff bits and not have to worry about, oh man, I dropped them on the carpet and they've disappeared forever. What am I going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you can't necessarily avoid every flyer that happens every now and then, you know? You make a cut weird and just flings. But like doing something to mitigate that and finding some way to deal with it, because there's a lot of times, yeah, where they just go straight down. And like all of a sudden it's like, oh, that tiny piece has gone away, especially in Warhammer. It's like, oh, the head disappeared. Where'd it go?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have kind of that kind of almost like little portable hobby table thing that helps with that. But I mean, if they're just ones where you can grab them and kind of putting them in anywhere. Another good example for that, though, is like the segmented, like a segmented box. So like sometimes they're jewelry boxes. Sometimes I know they're you could use like a little screw box, or like a, you know, like a, yeah, like one of those like tiny screws, like dividers boxes. That way any of those bits that you want to try to put in and like safekeep for later or whatever, you can kind of just keep them in there, and you can also organize them at the same time. All right. Well, otherwise, kind of like the nice moving on up thing. Obviously one of them is honestly a pretty good one, and I think could have gone into the must-haves, but is a wet palette. You know, there are a lot at various prices. You know, they're, you know, like Army Painter makes like a huge one, like it's giant, and it comes with like, that's pretty extra, and like that's really for giant projects, like somebody who's doing a lot of painting at one time. Especially you can get plenty smaller ones, and honestly you don't need a really big one. Mine is pretty small. I mean, and it cost me just under $20. And you know, there is, it's very nice. It has the sponge, it's got the wet palette paper, and it has like a 6 cup for like non, like paint, like things like contrast paints, technically maybe like metals you probably should put in there. Ones that like shouldn't, because sometimes the paint can permeate through the paper, and ones that you really want to make sure that don't do that, obviously, like you would put in that, right? Or obviously in the case with contrast paint, it's already thin as hell, you don't need to put it on a wet palette, it'll make it terrible. You kind of defeat the purpose of how the contrast paint works. So, you know, these could be great from the start, but like, the big thing obviously is like, don't leave them on the paper forever. They just kind of become then a watery paint, and they almost are too thin at that point. So just kind of, it's a learning experience from that perspective. But honestly, like wet palettes make it stupid easy to thin paints. Like all you do is when you put the glob of paint down, you just rub it down. And like, it's almost like it's almost like what you used to do when you would like get extra paint off of a brush, like when you were younger, you know, and you would put it in the glob of paint, but then you get told like, well, take off the excess, you know, by like an art teacher or something. Mm-hmm. You almost do that on the wet palette. Like you go into the glob or near the end of the glob, and you just kind of rub it down until it's thin enough. You kind of can see how thin it's getting. And then you go to the model, and it's set to go. You know, it's thinned down. It's still moist. It, like, because the issue with doing this on a dry, like on a paper towel or something like that, is all the moisture goes away. And you need that moisture to apply the paint, to get it to adhere nicely, to get it to spread, get good coverage. Which is also why when it's too thick, then you don't get good coverage either, because then you have no paint left. So you gotta, it helps you find that middle ground very nicely, and a lot easier because all you're doing is just dragging more of the paint down, essentially. So I love wet palettes. I highly recommend them. There's another painting device, though, that I've always been very kitschy on this show, but now is the time to talk about it. And that's the airbrush. This, honestly, though, the airbrush is a great thing, because like wet palettes, I think if you're into painting your Gunpla, obviously then are very handy, right? But like, I think a lot of paints that go onto Gunpla are washes and oils, and they don't really go onto a wet palette, you know. But you know what can go through an airbrush? At least one of them.
Air.
Or I meant to say what you can use in Gunpla that can go into an airbrush, or is an air, whatever. I'm trying to say you can use an airbrush with a Gunpla, damn it.
Yes, it is possible. It can be done.
Oils, probably not recommended. I mean, a lot of oils especially are not acrylics. So putting those through an airbrush could destroy your lungs. So don't do that indoors without a mask and a ventilation system. But you can put your acrylic washes through them. Acrylic washes. You know, but like that's really good for weathering, right? Washes are great if you want to apply weathering. I love weathering. I love weathered Gunpla. I've seen weathered Gunpla, like battle scarred Gunpla models. I love that. One of the earliest like Gundam toys, so not obviously Gunpla because I didn't do that as a kid, but like the actual just like toys was like, I think it was, I forgot what, which one it was from, but I think it was like a battle. If I remember correctly, I think it was like a battle, you know, it's like all like essentially dirty, like battle hardened burning Gundam toy. So like part of the wing like looks broken and it's got like smoke marks all over it. Like it's just been exploded next to, you know, like it's it has a lot of ash and stuff like that. And I've always loved that look on Gunpla. And obviously washes are very good. And what is great, what goes through, a great way to apply washes is through an airbrush. They do awesome work. But so obviously I've sounded a lot like an airbrush hater in the past, you know, but that's because a lot of times we're talking about being very early in your hobbying career and they are an investment. They just are. And they're not always very beginner friendly. The way they clog, the way you have to clean them, the way to prevent those clogs, they're not necessarily intuitive. They're things that you maybe wouldn't even think of. I mean, hell, I clogged the shit out of my airbrush not super long ago because Vallejo White sucks. I've been incredibly frustrated recently. I've had this Vallejo White. And from a pigment standpoint, it's fine. As a paint, it's frustrating as shit. I'm getting really annoyed with it. So this is my time to vent about that.
Yeah.
It's just been really annoying. But going through the airbrush, it's been equally as annoying because it's so thick. It's so bad. If you can't get the mix in well enough before it seeps down into the airbrush like crevices, shit's clogged immediately. It's game over. Gotta tear the, and it's like clogged to the point of like, it's not just where airbrush cleaner will fix it. You have to take the whole thing apart to like clean it out. And like telling that to a new person, it's just going to get him to stop painting, you know? So, but now going into the defense of the airbrush, they do a great job. For example, like the model that we had that I was painting during our Space Marine, like our custom Space Marine chapter episode.
Mm-hmm.
I used the airbrush pretty much for everything, and I loved it. It was such a great experience. Airbrushing on flat panels, so like airbrushing for tile, awesome. So good. Almost a must, honestly, in some respects. Because I brush painted my Cold Star battle suit, because I didn't have an airbrush then. And what I was running into, honestly, I was running into what is kind of one of the maybe frustrating points of contrast paints, which was I was getting a lot of what felt like splotchy looks to it, right? It didn't feel like it was going on as like a smooth paint, you know? Part of that is because I was using a contrast paint, which is, does not go onto flat panels crazy well. It's meant to go into crevices, you know? But also, you know, it's just because it's very hard to get a very smooth paint job on flat panels. sometimes. Mm-hmm. So an airbrush obviously does this very well because it is incredibly hard to not have perfect coverage on a model. Like, to make it too thick, you are specifically doing something very wrong. You know, you've got the brush on full power, you know, or you've got it on full power and you've put the brush like right next to it, you know, like, you know, you've put up like the airbrush like right to the face of the model. It's just like you're doing something very clearly wrong technique wise to do this right. And like, you know, even if you're doing it kind of right, you'll get a very good result. So like, airbrushes, when they're not doing the things that make them frustrating, they suddenly make your paint job look stupid easy, you know? And they sometimes, like when you use them and they use them right, they feel like a cheat code. They just do sometimes. And I can't deny that. And granted, one of the benefits is, you know, my airbrush is fairly inexpensive. It's the Gahleri. It's, you know, one of those random ass Chinese brands, but it's actually very nice. It has held up super well. It's a really good like diameter and like needle size for like Warhammer and stuff. And even honestly for like doing washes on Gunpla, the GAD 39, GHAD 39. And it was only, you know, and it's $45. It cost me $45 for the airbrush and it does a great job. It's very easy to clean. It's honestly everything I would want. I think I could ask for from a starter airbrush. And then you pair that with like a $30 to $40 compressor, like off Amazon, and you're set to go. And it's just, you know, you're right around or just under that $100 mark, which is a lot, but for an airbrush, very good, very respectable. You know, we're talking about upgrades now, right? You're making this decision. Mm-hmm. And you'll see a very night and day difference in like, especially something like how you think, right? Like, cause it just, one of the really also nice parts about airbrushes is they make you think differently about how to apply a paint job too, right? You suddenly think like, oh, maybe, I don't know, what if I paint it mostly dark? And then I do like a highlight color where I spray from the bottom, right? And I create like an underglow. Well, you can kind of start to think about doing that a lot easier because like an airbrush makes it just a little bit easier to just be like, and just like spray from underneath, like with a white, and then you do a color, and then boom, you've got this like underglow synthwave kind of feel, you know? Otherwise, one I think again is mostly painting focused, but could be useful for building, is some type of magnifying glass thing.
I'm glad we're bringing this up. This is a really interesting thing for me on my end.
Yeah. So whether it's the like head, like the head eye goggle, like magnifying glass thing,
mm-hmm. or we've all seen them. It's the like white plastic.
Yep.
That you just like, it's like a headband you put on your head and it's got the magnifying. Yep.
Yep. Or the like magnifying glass with like the ring light around it kind of one. That's the other one you'll see plenty frequently. Those are the two that I'm kind of referring to here. Both work great. They're kind of just, it's more about a comfort use case and area type thing. For example, the head one, the one that wraps around your head, sometimes using those is a little bit funky wearing glasses. So you may either need to take the glasses off or figure something out, because obviously like you're essentially putting a magnifying glass in front of another magnifying glass. And if you're far or if you're nearsighted, especially, they're going to be working opposite each other. So they're going to kind of like nullify each other. So like you'll put the magnifying on, and if your glasses are on, you'll get less magnification than if you didn't have them on, right? Mm. Fun science fact for you on that one. So like in that scenario, maybe using like the big fat magnifying glass, you know, on like holder and arm thing might be more useful. But these are super helpful, especially like for painting, because trying to get the really small edges of armor and panels or like eyeball, like eye slots, you know, just tiny little pieces of filigree, you know. And then sometimes they can come in handy in building if you've got a really tight, weird spot. Especially, I imagine this is probably a bigger thing with your higher grades in Gunpla. Mm-hmm. Like, I imagine a master grade probably has, like, more likely going to have, like, this really tiny piece that's got to go in this weird-ass spot kind of thing.
I'll tell you what, the real thing, I think, absolutely, like, having... you're going to have a lot of much smaller, more unique pieces. That's almost across the board, and it becomes not just a grade thing, but like a specific model thing, mm-hmm. where some models, just based on the design of the mech itself, can have much smaller pieces compared to others. Yeah. It's something you see with the Witch for Mercury models, where the high grades have a lot more like intricate details compared to just doing like a basic RX-78. And so just even in the process of like putting the head together, there's like a lot more smaller bits that you're working with. I'll tell you what, for me, the biggest thing, because I have, what I have is like the table magnifier. It sets up on the table and then it's got the like metal clamps that gets used for like a lot of model stuff. Mm-hmm. The biggest reason that I use it, I don't use it often, but almost 100% of the time, I use the model clamps when I'm doing sticker applications, which is, I know it's not like a huge thing in 40K modeling. It pops up for sure. It's there.
The equivalent is transfer sheets.
Yes, transfer sheets. Absolutely. And like anything like that, where it's like, it would be better for me to have the model secured and held down on the desk with the big magnifier than for me to try to do this while holding the model in my hand. I tend to have, I have like shaky hands in general. I have like hand tremors that I deal with. Mm-hmm. And like the process, even with tweezers, which we spoke about before, again, very important tool. Trying to use tweezers to like apply stickers or trying to apply transfer sheets, I can't trust my own hands, if I'm being honest. Like, I can't trust my own hands to be like extremely steady like they need to be to apply those. And so that's where the magnifier tool and having something that I can just like clamp the model in place and then have the big magnifier over it, that is a huge thing that like makes it, that takes it from being like the most annoying part of the building process to being much simpler for me to actually deal with. And I'm always going to prefer that in terms of like how I'm using a magnifier, is just like having the model set on the table and then put the magnifier over it. Like I've tried using the headsets before, not a big fan of them, because it doesn't actually, like, I can see the model more clearly. I can get in and see those smaller pieces, but it doesn't fix the main problem for me personally, which is like the model itself. And like, I need the model to be steady. It's almost less important to have the magnifier as much as it is to be able to keep the model really steady when I'm applying those really small pieces to it.
Yes. No, absolutely. I am not super crazy on the head. I use my table magnifier way more than I use my headband one. But it's very much a to each their own kind of thing. I think the biggest reason I don't like using the head one is I feel like it also is a great, like, it's, it almost kind of promotes hunch painting.
Yeah.
Some could say that's true about the magnifying glass, but with the magnifying glass, I'm not constantly looking through it. I'm only doing it, using it when I need it. Otherwise, I move it to the side and I just use its light, you know. So I only need to maybe hunch paint for that second. But if I'm wearing the lamp, you know, especially then, because then I'm taking out my glasses to use it, to use like the head magnifier. Then all of a sudden, you know, well, and then I'm almost constantly needing to hunch over. So like, maybe it's a me problem, but yeah, I agree. I think the table one is generally better, but I know that there is nothing wrong with the head one.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I just kind of have two semi-extra ones where it's just like, these are good ones. The first one is just a better paint cup, you know, and this, like, look, the glass or the, like, a glass cup or a mug are going to be fine forever, right? Duh. But like sometimes there are the special cups that have like the ridge, like silicone bottoms that you can kind of, you know, shake the brush through. They'll have like little brush holders on the side. You know, it's just very nice. And it's a good way to have like, because that abrasive and ridged thing will help clear the paint off the brush, you know. And it'll do it in a way that, as long as you're not pressing down, obviously, that won't damage them. So it's a nice to have. It's not really like super crazy needed though in any way.
For me personally, I'm still using the Citadel water cup. It's the one that they, you know, came out with like years and years ago.
Yes, maybe is a little bit costed, but honestly is pretty good.
It is. It's one of the things where it's like, I mean, you can say that for everything Citadel related, like, hey, correct, why does this cost so much? But this really is like, it was a good investment. I feel like I really appreciate it's the lid. The lid is everything. Like, mm-hmm, obviously the actual pot itself isn't that, it's just a cylinder pot, but like the lid having the different sized holes for the brushes to rest in. It's just a really nice, not required, but a really nice thing for when you're doing a lot of painting.
Yeah. So then the last thing I want to talk about, it. This is new and it's interesting. And it could actually come up with some of that sticker thing I was talking to you about at some point. And that's recently Goblin Hobbies. And this has been a thing for forever. This is not, they didn't invent this, but they've come out with a stamper.
Oh,
so I'm going to paste this. Thing for you here. Yes. So they use essentially what has been utilized in nail painting and, like, you know, little printing, like where, you know, you just press the nail like design and like you essentially just stamp nail polish like and design onto your nail. They've taken that methodology and they've said, hey, we could do that onto our Warhammer minis. So these transfer in sheets, like the metal plates that the, you know, that the things and the whatnot that they get pressed from, you know, obviously, like, those have existed forever. I mean, there are ones that you can get today, right, that are random generic shapes, you know, like that are, you know, a heart, you know, a texture type, whatever. And you can get them with, you can get a kit with nail polish and everything and the same exact, you know, silicone stamper. But, you know, they were like, well, we can work with a factory to get one that has Warhammer-esque designs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, this is a product essentially by two YouTubers who are starting this company, Goblin Hobbies. But, you know, this concept and like what it has is super cool. And I think it's a great idea. Yeah, and it's why hasn't anybody done this in the Warhammer space yet? Is crazy. There's just so many different shapes, and they do super cool things. And honestly, somebody ends up designing some of these or creating custom ones for various. Honestly, you could probably take some of these and put them onto a Gunpla model. And boom, you've got something going for you there. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to apply a sticker ever again.
Dude, imagine licensing would have to get involved. But like, yeah, imagine a stamping plate that has like Earth Federation decals and like Zabi decals and all that. Like,
you know?
Yeah, that would be awesome. Principality of Xeon, you know, the flags and everything like that, like being able to stamp that onto your Zaku models would be insane. That'd be super.
Yeah, cool. I mean, hey, look, it may cost twice as much, you know, so it may cost closer to like $30 versus 16 or 10, depending on the plate you're getting it from. But hey,
but you're paying for time.
Well, I was gonna say, you know what? An upload of a PNG of a logo and a semi sketchy seller on Etsy in China is your step away from having that Xeon emblem plate. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just saying, there are places that copyright laws tend to get skirted. You want to get specific types of nail polish and whatnot, but like, this isn't the time or place for that discussion. Poorhammer did do an episode on this recently. Go watch that episode if you want kind of tips and tricks and how to avoid failures and whatnot with that. But anyway, that was all the ones that I had. I don't know if you had any extras that I didn't have.
No, nothing else. Super, super crazy. Like I say, going back to the palettes and things like that, and like the palettes that I brought up before, a big thing for me is that when I was upgrading my stuff over time, I was looking less at like the tools that I was using actively to work on the models and everything around my workspace. I think some of the biggest upgrades that I made to like improve was like looking at the space where I was building things. You know, whether it was like, you know, what am I using in terms of like a table, you know, to actually place them on? How much space am I giving, like physical space am I giving myself to work on my models? Obviously, everybody has to kind of work with what they have available to them in their situation and where they live. But like, yeah, for me, you know, figuring out where am I the most comfortable physically to work on these models and making changes around that, whether it's something as simple as just like, you know, getting yourself a proper cutting mat. If you know that you're somebody who kind of prefers a bit of messiness and like having things kind of strewn about while you're working, because some people like that. They don't, you know, they're not interested in like trying to be super efficient and having everything organized. Like, there's definitely there's an interest and there's a comfort in letting your workspace kind of be a little more cluttered. So just having something like a mat that you can lay down that allows you to feel less anxious about like getting paint spills anywhere or, you know, dropping things around, that does wonders for how you mentally upgrade, you know, taking this on as a hobby. And having it continue to be something that you enjoy instead of getting caught up in the things that are kind of making you like frustrated about doing it.
Right. I mean, finding, that's my thought. It's like a lot of times the upgrades that I think are worth looking at, it's not when you're like, will getting this make me better? It's more like, will this help me be more efficient? Right. Or so for me, for example, a lot of times with like painting stuff, it's, will this help me be faster? Right. Yeah. So that I'm not spending 3 hours doing a model paint. Maybe instead, you know, especially if it's like simple infantry, like basic Space Marine or a clan rat. Right. I can drop that if it's something that can help me drop that down as much as possible. So then when I get to the captain or the fancy unit or the whatever that the thing I want to spend 3 hours painting, that it's because I'm doing it that because I want to, not because I'm stuck, you know, trying to re-wet all my paints, you know, or get my mix back or, you know, clean up a bunch of crap, you know? So it's not to improve you, it's to take your improvements to another level that you already have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's yes, that's the wording. You want to improve what you already have going on. You don't want your mental focus to be like, I need more of this. It's like, look at what you already have going into the hobby. That's what you want to work on and you want to improve.
Yeah, the Sable or natural hairbrush is a good example of that. You know, if you're already decent at trying to get the paintbrush into an edge highlight or trying to, you know, get it into to create, you know, to paint eye slots, if you've already learned to do that with a synthetic, then it's just then at that point getting the natural hair or Sable is going to be just about like, all right, I don't have to like. I could do it once. I don't have to worry. It's just like, I don't have to worry about splinter coming off or whatever. I'm not thinking about that. Now I'm just thinking about what I'm doing and not getting distracted because it's like all of a sudden I see, oh, there's one stray hair, you know? But you've already done it, right? That's the thing. It's like, you've done it already. So this will just make you better at the thing you already are good at. All right. But if nothing else, I think that'll do it for us.
In the end, the biggest and most important tool is you. Oh. It's you, my friend.
Oh, how sweet.
Affectionate.
Platonically. All right. I think we can use that as our out here. I think kind of looking into some funky stuff, we might end up with actually a week break here. So we'll kind of see how that rolls out here. Some of the episodes over the next month, we might have some skips, hence why I'm warning about this now. I have a wedding coming up, so that's going to take a lot of my time.
And I have a retirement party coming up.
Yeah. So there's a lot of planning and things going on. So our recordings might be a little bit weird, we might try to make some work. We're going to obviously talk to each other, but sometimes we're just going to be in a scenario where we can't do anything. So in the coming month or so, you see a few skipped episodes. That's just how it's going to be. I can almost guarantee you that week of my wedding, there will not be an episode. That is like a hard guarantee. I will not be editing at all that week. I will be way too busy. Yeah. So just keeping that in mind. So next week, kind of partly in relation to some of those things, that's kind of partly why we're into next. Like, we may not have an episode next week, but for sure we will have our Gundam focused episode likely being then the next one. But that'll be at the beginning of May, and that's going to be a fun one because we're going to talk a little bit of some 0079, that original series.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of a good starting point, I think, you know,
a very good starting point.
Yeah. So for our new Gundam segments and episodes, monthly series. But yeah, otherwise, we'll see you guys next episode, whatever that may be.
All right. Goodbye.